You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Solowit played a key role in establishing conceptualism and minimalism as major art movements in the post-war era. He was revered for his large-scale installations, but he was also a champion of public art, creating what he called structures and murals in public parks, buildings, and subway stations. Solowit died in 2007, but his work is still being made as a dedicated team of assistants continues to create his enormous labor-intensive installations. In a new documentary called Solowit, director Chris Thiering films one of these installations in process while revealing the life and work of a notoriously camera-shy man who almost never gave interviews. Chris Thiering joins me in the studio today. Welcome to our show.
Well, thank you for having me here.
At the center of your film is the creation in 2011 of an installation of a piece called Wall Drawing Number 801, Spiral, and that's in Maastricht, the Netherlands. Is that what you're Dutch? Is that what got you involved in doing this?
That's where it started. When I heard that they were going to do that wall drawing, I thought, well, that enables me to make a film about his work, because then you could witness something being made rather than, you know, a fait accompli where you only look at works that are already done and are there. So that's definitely where it started, yeah.
Can you describe the piece?
It's a white line. It's in a round cathedral-like room, and the room is black, and there is one white line starting at the top of the building or the room, ending as a spiral at the bottom. And I think in miles, it's 3.6 miles long.
Wow.
And the effect is amazing, and it's a very beautiful piece.
Did he design the piece for that space?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it's unique.
Well, he is no longer alive. How did his assistants know how to make it? Does he give very exact instructions?
Well, the instructions in this case are very simple. It's just one line, and it's like the width is put on paper. But the assistant that did this piece, or was the guy who was the head of the team, worked with Sol for 25 years. So people that do these world drawings, they know him very well, and they know what he wanted. So that's how they can do it.
Well, given the size of a piece like this, it seems it would be pretty easy to make mistakes.
As when you see the film, that's actually true. There, at one point, they discovered that they made a mistake and they had to redo it. Yeah, because once at the beginning, if you make a mistake at the beginning, it will just amplify and mess it all up. So,
was Solowit ever unhappy about the way his installations turned out looking?
I don't know. I never met Solowit myself, so I cannot really answer that question. I know that at the beginning he said that's part of the work. Mistakes are part of the work, and I think that later on the execution of the works became more and more important.
Well, what was his relationship to his assistants? Did they talk everything over before they got going on a work?
I think so, yeah. But like I said, they worked with him for a long time.
On the other hand, couldn't anyone make one of his works by simply following the instructions?
That's definitely how it started. Yeah, that anybody could make it. But some of them are really, really complicated.
Well, the museum director talks about doing one from his instructions and
exactly.
Finding it a lot harder than it looked when he first looked at it. Do we know why he chose to have them put directly on the walls?
I find it difficult to answer. One of the reasons that I think is to make them not like unique objects that has a certain value put on them. And I think it's also the time where people were looking for a more democratic way of making art.
Well, there is the possibility in many cases that they were going to be painted over after the exhibit.
Yeah.
So they couldn't be sold. Although I guess you could do them on plasterboard, but
no. What you you, when you buy a wall drawing, you buy a certificate that tells you you are the owner of this work. And then you can execute it on a wall, you can repaint it, and then do it somewhere else again. And that also means that 200 years from now, you could make an original Solowitz.
What was the idea or concept of a piece as important to Lewitt as the actual finished piece?
At the beginning, I think the concept was more important than the execution. I think towards the end, the execution became more important, the way that it looked became more important. And I think, and that's also what I tried to do in the film, is that he got more interested in the beauty aspect of the work, and even, let's say, the, for lack of a better word, the spiritual aspect of the work.
Well, I would assume that some museums were reluctant to show piece because it would take up a lot of space, take a long time to create, and then unless they decided to keep it forever, it was going to be destroyed.
Yeah, well, that's Alexander Vergevenstein, who was the curator of the show in Amsterdam. It was his hat was on the line. Yeah, it was a big success. Therefore, you know, it was good for him. But if it was a failure, then it would be the end of him as well, I think. So that's definitely there's a risk involved. I mean, not anymore, but certainly at the beginning. I mean, they closed the museum for 3 months in order to put the show up, and they closed it for, I think, a month to take it down again. So that's a big deal.
At a big expense.
And a big expense, yeah.
Do we know if his work was appreciated when he began exhibiting, or is this something that gained momentum over the years?
I don't know in the U.S., but I know in Holland, he immediately he was loved and recognized.
Well, a lot of the conceptual and minimalist artists had enjoyed even more successful careers in Europe than they have in this country. Most of the major exhibits that someone like Carl Andre has had over the recent years have been in Europe. I guess it's something that touches the European soul. But in doing your research, did you find that there were critics who didn't like the idea that he had other people doing his work?
No, that was not part of my research, and that was also not where my interest
was. Well, I know that conservative critics did criticize him for it, even though if we look at the history of art, Rubens had
exactly.
His assistants doing pretty much, and Andy Warhol more recently, he had a factory. It was nothing unique here. This is really, but in the case of Solowitz, there does seem to be a real separation between the doing the small drawing and saying, okay, this is going to be so large and you have to do these things, and then the actual execution.
Yeah. What Sol always did do was always mention the assistant that first executed the work. There was always, in the catalog, there's always the name of the assistant there. So it's not that he was the only name on the work.
The film indicates that it was influenced by the 19th century photographer Edward Muybridge, whose work was mostly about motion.
Yeah.
So Lewitt's work is very still. do we know what kind of connection there was?
Well, what he said that what attracted him was that Muybridge also showed things from three different angles. And I think that's more what interested him.
Well, Lewitt did a lot of what would be called sculptures. He called them structures.
Structures, yeah.
He didn't want them to be called sculptures. Some of the film is shot in Spoleto, where he moved. Do we know why he left the New York art scene?
I think he left because he wanted to be living a quiet life, and at that time he was sort of like escaping from the name that that was establishing for him.
He felt very uncomfortable with the whole idea of the celebrity artist.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And he's been described as the opposite of the artist as celebrity. He rarely granted interviews.
It's true.
You would think that somebody who was so intellectualized, his work would be happy to talk about it.
You always said that it's about the work, not about the person.
Well, since he was so averse to attention, did it feel strange making this film? It's almost as though you're going against his wishes.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that's I thought about that a lot. And I also thought that the question, should I ever show a picture of him in the film or should I not? And I was leaning towards not showing a picture. Then I found a man in Spoleto, and a photographer took a snapshot, and I thought, well, that's so sweet and harmless that this is my way of showing one picture of him in the whole film.
And you spoke to some of his neighbors in Spoleto.
Yeah.
What did they say about him?
Well, they all loved him. And I was there in a cafe. One of the neighbors, she runs, she has a little cafe in town. And when I got there, she didn't want to be interviewed. And I was really surprised, like, why? You know, he was a good friend. And anyway, I managed to change her mind. And then we did the interview, and I'm not exaggerating. Within 4 minutes, she was crying because she loved him so much. And then I knew this is the reason why he didn't want to be interviewed, because you knew you were going to start crying. And, you know, that. In the editing, I try to condense it and not make it so, you know, emotional. But you could see that people really, really loved him. And he was more than a rich American artist who had a house there. His two daughters were born there, and he really lived there for 5 years. And he was part of the community.
Well, although he was in an area that was rich in art history, because he's near Assisi, he's near Rome, not all that far from Siena, his work doesn't look like it was influenced by Italian art.
Well, one of the reasons why I wanted to film in Italy, because Italy changed his work. You can see how, I think at least, the use of colors changed.
Mm-hmm. Well, we can see his work a short train ride away in Beacon, New York, at the Dia Beacon. There's also a major installation that you filmed at Mass MoCA.
Yeah, that's a great exhibition.
And that will be there forever, as far as I know.
Well, 25 years is not forever, but it's a pretty long time.
Oh, so that was the commitment, 25 years?
Yeah. But I wouldn't be surprised if they do it longer than that.
I know one of his former assistants, and he said that every so often he's called upon to fix up one of the pieces because they are very, very vulnerable to anybody touching them or putting graffiti on them. Because of the process by which they were made?
Well, I don't know which work that is, but some of them are just pencil lines, and they are very vulnerable. And I think if people touch them, they will be smudged.
Now, most of the assistants are getting on in years. Are they still doing this, or have they moved on to doing their own work?
I think all of them do their own work still, but they're still making Levitz. And what is being done is to preserve the knowledge around making these wall drawings, not only in a physical sense, but also in a psychological way, so that indeed 200 years from now you can make a Solovit and it's still an original.
Well, you couldn't do that with a Picasso.
No.
But the Lewitt would be a Lewitt.
Yeah.
Definitely. And just as beautiful.
It's like music. It's like a composer. You can, you know, Bach is still an original Bach. It's just a different interpretation.
The film is being shown for 1 week at the Film Forum, 1 week only, May 7th through the 13th. It is lovely to look at, well, as lovely as Saul Lewitt's glorious wall pieces, mostly in pencil, were they? None of them are painted, are they? They have this kind of special glow to them.
There are different techniques. There's pencil, there's ink, and there's acrylic paint. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you so much for being on our show.
Well, thank
I've
you
been
for
speaking
having me.
With the filmmaker who directed a film called Saul Lewitt, Chris Drierink. Did I pronounce the name okay?
Close enough.
Thanks for being on our show.
Thank
My
you
Dutch
for
is
me.
Very weak.
Okay, thank you.